Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Congress is in recess this week. Before the break, lawmakers passed a two-year budget deal, but failed to come up with a fix for DACA and handling the undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, known as Dreamers, who face deportation if nothing is done to renew the program that allows them to stay in the U.S. That DACA issue and gun control in the wake of last week's school shooting in Florida are likely to be front and center when the House and Senate get back to work on Capitol Hill next week. Delaware's senior senator Tom Carper visited our studios this week to discuss these issues and more with us. I do want to start with last week's school shooting in Parkland, Florida. And one of the questions being asked by many people, including some of the students there who survived, is why hasn't Congress addressed shootings like this one with some kind of gun regulations, even things that polls show most Americans agree on, whether it be stronger or expanded background checks, banning bump stocks, assault rifle ban. Do you see any chance of changes like these coming after this latest
incident? God, I sure hope so. I hope so. I mean, you see, background, boy, I was born, my sister and I were born in West Virginia, family of hunters. I still have my grandfather's shotgun that he gave it to me after he died. I was about 12. Dad taught me to hunt when I was a kid. And my dad, later in life, he was not a gun dealer, but he was a gun collector, and he would buy and sell guns. But he would buy and sell guns to people he knew. And he always talked about using common sense and everything, including the way, the kind of laws we have for guns. I'm a big believer in Second Amendment rights for people to own and buy weapons. However, there's some common sense things that my dad and I used to talk about that said the idea of selling armor-piercing bullets. He said, you don't really need those when you're hunting deer or a wild boar. He said the idea of folks being able to walk into a gun show and go to one gun dealer, it's a federally licensed gun dealer, you have to provide your background information, everything, and your ID. And if you have a history of mental illness or you have a felony record, then they won't sell your guns. You go to the same gun show to the next dealer over who's not federally registered and buy the same weapons. It never made much sense. My dad doesn't make much sense to me. The idea that people can buy bump stocks and turn a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon, we don't really need that. I'm a supporter of legislation that says if you're on a terrorist watch list and you cannot fly in an airplane, you should not be able to buy a weapon. No fly, no buy. That's just common sense stuff. And if you ask American people how they feel about it, they say, well, that makes common sense. Those are good ideas. And so most people say, why don't you do that? Here's why. Today, our Republicans' friends are in the majority in the House and the Senate, and they have the White House. And they don't want to change the gun laws. Well, I'll leave it up to them to explain why, but it's a source of concern and frustration, I think, for most American people. Every time we have a tragedy like this, people ask, well, maybe is this what it's going to take in order to get Congress and the president to do something? And my hope and prayer is that this will.
Another area that's been kind of a point of frustration because of inaction is DACA and some kind of legislation to protect Dreamers, the undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. Number of bills came up short last week in the Senate. From your standpoint, what is the path forward?
I think a lot of people in this country have actually met people from other countries who've come here, maybe brought here as children and by their parents, and they've grown up here, educated here, work here, good community citizens and servants in some cases. And there's about 700,000 to 800,000 of them. And the question is, are we going to send them back to the countries where they were born, even though this is the only country most of them ever really knew? I hear from employers almost every day, who say to me, I'm having a hard time getting people to come to work to do a wide range of jobs. I was in a financial institution the other day. They were having trouble getting people who can have the kind of technology skills and can actually do the technology that the banks need. I talked to last week. We had people in D.C. from Central and Southern Delaware who run landscaping businesses. They have a similar problem. You have people who are in the poultry businesses, and they have a problem. It's all over the state, all over the country. Today, about 2 to 3 million jobs that are not being filled. I mean, businesses opened up, people are going to work, and 2 to 3 million jobs were unfilled because the folks who are needed to fill those jobs either don't have the skills, the education, the work ethic. We can't pass a drug test. And so in the middle of all of this, the idea that we're going to say, here are 700,000 or 800,000 people. They came here, they're born in other countries. They came here brought by their parents when they're young, educated, grown up here, we want to contribute. We're going to send them home. Employers say to me, why does that make sense? That's like in our naked interest to try to make sure those people stay here and make a contribution instead of going back to where they were born and compete against us. The majority of Americans, three-quarters of Americans, I think, would like to see the Dreamers being given a chance to stay here, not become citizens right away. One of the legislation, a piece of legislation we voted on last week was provided for, I think, a 12-year path to citizenship. And the president could have played, I think, a more constructive role than he played on this. President sees himself as a deal maker, art of the deal. And there was just a crying need for somebody to play that role. I've been chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the United States Senate. I spent a lot of time on the border with Mexico, into Central America, into Mexico, meeting with all kinds of people, Border Patrol and others. I worked with a fellow named Kevin McLeland, and he is the senior person in the Border Patrol. He's got tens of thousands of people who work for him along the border and elsewhere around the world. He says to me, we don't need any more people on the border. We don't need any more Border Patrol people. What we need are about 3,000 people at the border crossings where there's a lot of traffic, a lot of commerce that goes through. He says we need about 3,000 more people there. And he and I have laid out a whole lot of what we call them force multipliers. We call them force multipliers that would make the 20-some thousand Border Patrol that we have there far more effective. And it could be drones. It's drones with surveillance equipment, airplanes, helicopters. It's the dirigibles that go up 5,000 feet into the air with surveillance equipment. It's boats that can go along the Rio Grande River high speed, boat ramps to launch them. In some places, it's horses and high vegetation where your Border Patrol are up on a horse. You're able to see better. It's all kinds of stuff. It's always better intelligence. It's units, it's stationary towers, it's mobile towers, it's motion detectors, all kinds of stuff. And the commissioner of Border Patrol and I literally submitted this list. It costs less than $1 billion a year, and it includes some money for a wall where it makes sense, a lot of money, more money for fences, which makes sense. It could be roads alongside the fences, all kinds of stuff that would make the Border Patrol more effective. That would actually enhance our border security. There's a compromise to be held here, which would enable us to have better border security, which would enable us to meet the crying demands and needs of not just the Dreamers, the DACA folks, but also the employers who would like for them to stay here and work here.
Let's move on to the budget deal that was passed, 2-year budget deal earlier this month. What does that mean for Delaware?
There are a number of federally qualified community health centers in Delaware where thousands and thousands of people get cost-effective, low-cost health care. West Side is one. We have Henrietta Johnson up north. West Side is also located down here in Kent County, La Red in Sussex County. And they provide health care every week to thousands of people, whether they have a dime to their names or a lot more money to their names. They can, if they have insurance, that covers it. Otherwise, they can pay for it. But we've basically said, we're not going to let them run out of money. We're going to continue to fund them a little bit more money in the next couple of years. There's a program called the CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program, which is a state-federal partnership that insures, I want to say, maybe as many as 9 million kids in our country. Again, cost-effective and for lower-income folks. We're extended the life of that program for 10 years, and it actually saves money. And we have some money that we're pushing toward broadband deployment. We've got it, especially in Sussex County, a lot of places where we don't have the ability to get access to the Internet. It impedes our economic development and job creation in Sussex County. And that legislation, the budget deal, will help to address that. And we have places around the country. We certainly have places in Delaware where we need some extra money for water and sewer. But we have needs in Sussex County that we're mindful of right now. And there's not something for everybody in that legislation, but a lot of places. I think the best thing that comes out of the legislation is certainly predictability. Instead of lurching from one continuing resolution to another, we've got to be smarter than this. And I think we finally have, and without a lot of help from the White House on this one, in the Senate, Senator Chuck Schumer, there's a Democratic leader, Mitch McConnell, Republican leader, they worked it out with a lot of input from the rest of us. But it's an encouraging development.
You mentioned water earlier, and I know you've been very vocal in your criticism of the direction of the EPA under Scott Pruitt. How much do your concerns about the EPA grow when you look at the situation like the one we have in Blades with the contamination of well water there?
In Blades, they have a small town, about 1,200 people, and their wastewater treatment system is pretty old. And they have a contaminant that's measured in the parts per trillion, as I recall. Mm-hmm. But if you drink enough of it, it can be harmful to health. But it can be fixed by putting in a new filtration system in the place where they treat the water. And the problem with a lot of we have in other parts of Sussex County is there are high nitrates, low levels of nitrate, nitrogen, phosphorus, and a lot of it comes from agriculture, farming, fertilizer, and it could have something to do with the poultry industry, particularly if poultry litter is taken from poultry houses and farmers use it to spread it on their fields in inappropriate ways. So we have it's a lot easier to go into Blades and replace the filtration system, the charcoal filtration system. It's pretty expensive. But when you have hundreds of people or thousands of people with wells, their own individual wells, I've asked my staff, I said, figure out for us, for folks who have high levels of nitrates in their well water, is there a relatively inexpensive way for us to provide filtration as the water comes from their well to as it arrives at their home, so that the water that they drink and maybe bathe in and so forth is pure. And it's like a miniature version for every house that's affected compared to Blades, where they have a big filtration filter that they're going to implant there this week.
Do these type of concerns make you worry more about the oversight EPA will provide to handle problems like this, to find problems like this, to help assess problems like this?
Well, there are a lot of good people at the Environmental Protection Agency. Their life work is to make sure we're safe, we have public health protected, we have clean air to breathe and water to drink. The leadership at EPA is Scott Pruitt, I'm sure he's a smart guy, good lawyer. He should not be the person leading the Environmental Protection Agency. And he's taking him, in my judgment, I think in judgment of a lot of people who know him, who work there, who've seen him. They take him in the wrong direction. He'll be there for a while. He won't be there for long. And we're trying to make sure that the Congress, the Environment and Public Works Committee, where I'm the leading Democrat, senior Democrat, that we play the appropriate role that we should be playing to do oversight, congressional oversight, to make sure that the EPA is doing their job to protect our public health and make sure we have clean air and clean water. We clean up our brownfields. We clean up our hazardous waste sites.
Much of what we've discussed so far has been things that have been kind of points of frustration for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And this is an election year, a year in which you're up for re-election. Mm-hmm. You have both Republican and Democratic challengers that have emerged. What do you say to frustrated voters when you go out and ask them for their vote this year?
I really thank them. I served in our country in uniform, 23 years active in the Reserve Navy, as a naval flight officer in the Vietnam War and the Cold War. I love serving. I've considered a privilege. And the people, it's a perfect match for me. Folks here are fiscally conservative, and they believe in balanced budgets. They believe that it's important for us to provide a nurturing environment for job creation, job preservation. That's a big part of our jobs. And they're progressive on social issues. And that's really who I am. And so I found a little state, thank God, where I could be myself. I don't have to twist myself into a pretzel and pretend I'm somebody I'm not. It's who I am. And as it turns out, Delawareans seem to approve this message. So as long as they want me to serve them, I'm happy to do that. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. They don't want me to do it for the rest of my life. But I feel just a great privilege to serve. I love this state. I love the people here.
Do you feel like voters might be a little bit more demanding this year, that they may say to you, okay, well, you know, DACA, you know, budgets, you know, guns, you know, what are you going to do? You know, do you feel like you're going to get that more visceral kind of, you know, almost anger?
The amazing thing I felt, especially over the last year, actually since the last election, is greater support here in this state and across the country when people find out what I do than I've ever felt. I have people every day many people every day who come up and thank me for what I do and say thank you for being a voice of reason in a country where there's so much turmoil. He said, we need people like you who treat other people the way you want to be treated, who are trying to figure out what's the right thing to do and just to do it. People who are principled and stick to their principles, but also willing to work toward reasonable compromises with, you know, Democrats and Republicans and independents. So I think that's what the people in our state are looking for. We have, I call the four C's in Delaware, the four C's. It's sort of like the Delaware way. And the four C's include communicate, compromise, collaborate, and civility. And our congressional delegation, whether it's Chris Coons and Lisa Blount Rochester, or Mike Castle, or Joe Biden, or Bill Roth, or Ted Kaufman, Pete DuPont, I think we all try to reflect and live our lives by those four C's. Whether we think of it or not, we actually do, to communicate and to compromise and to try to collaborate and to use civility.
Thanks to Senator Tom Carper for joining us on The Green this week. And stay with us. We'll take a closer look at what's next for the Christina School District's Wilmington schools, now that the district and state have settled on a memorandum of understanding that aims to consolidate those schools. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.